Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Wu, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. This is both the beginning of a week and the end slash beginning of a month, so I wanted to kind of hit a couple of things at the same time, and so this episode is going to be a combination of my monthly schedule analysis segment, so kind of talking about what happened in December and what will happen in June in terms of rest and back-to-backs and all that. And then the second part is going to be the four factors, catching up on where the Warriors are through the first little less than half of the season, and comparing it not only to how they did last year, but also how they did last year to this point, which is one of the cool things you can do with the NBA stats site of picking specific date ranges. But the first thing is the schedule. This was a very interesting month because I had kind of circled in my head that there were some really tough stretches. The Warriors only had three back-to-backs, but they were really tough because they were all road back-to-backs, meaning that each game was on the road, and a lot of them were against good teams. And so the first thing that I always look at with this is the second end of a back-to-back. And the Warriors only had three of those this time, but even more, because they were doing really well in those before, they only had two opponents that had played the night before. So they ended up being 3-0 in those road games on the back-to-back. There were some kind of weird ones in there, just in terms of like the Jazz game, for example, where was a tail end of back-to-back, but the Jazz were missing a bunch of their guys. Also that one against the Pistons shortly before the Cleveland game. And so they were kind of bizarre circumstances. The other one was the Minnesota game, which was also bizarre because the Warriors had that huge fourth quarter comeback, but they did go 3-0. So that is pretty interesting. And unsurprisingly, the two games where they played an opponent on a back-to-back were both comfortable wins. The game on Friday against the Dallas Mavericks, which I did not do a podcast on, but wrote about for The Athletic, if you want to check it out there. And then Klay's 60-point game against the Indiana Pacers back on December 5th, which was another just easy win for them. I mean, it ended up becoming more significant because of what Klay did, but that was still interesting. And January actually pushes that more. So the early part of the season has more back-to-backs, and I think this is true broadly around the league. And then they tone it down for as much as they can for the rest of the year, but it gets a little bit more hairy in February. But in January, the Warriors only have two back-to-backs in, so they have an Orlando Miami one, and then at the very end of the month they host the Clippers and then fly to Portland the next day, which is not necessarily a schedule loss considering how shaky Portland has been so far this year, but certainly not helpful. So that is, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, you only play two games. There's a lot of one-day gap, so it's like on-off. And also, the Warriors have this ridiculous thing where the first half of the month, they don't leave Northern California because the only game is in Sac. So that is another reason why, because teams very rarely play home-home back-to-backs because it's hard for season ticket holders, it's hard for fans. The Clippers actually did it late in the month. The Clippers actually had this crazy thing where they played four games in five nights all at Staples because one of the games in the middle was against the Lakers at Staples. I think it was around Christmas. And so that's kind of where they are in terms of back-to-backs in that part. But one of the most interesting things, and I put this kind of as a lark on the list of kind of for this and for The Athletic at the beginning of the year, was I wanted to see how the Warriors did on the front end of back-to-backs, mostly in terms of their opponents, because I thought those were games that if the Warriors took a lead, maybe they would just the opponents would start pulling their starters and look forward to the next day. And that certainly has happened a few times and can happen a little bit more. So in those games, when the Warriors had a back-to-back, so when they played the next night, they were 2-1. The one loss was that game to Memphis where they just got knocked off the court and then won the next night in Minnesota. And then they also had a bad performance against the Nets in Brooklyn, but they ended up winning, you know, because the Nets are terrible. And then they only won three out of the five games against an opponent who had to play the next night, but those two losses were to the Cavs and the Rockets. Neither one of those was because of that. It was just something to note. But the far more compelling part of that story is how those five teams, because I said the Warriors played five teams who played the next night, how those five teams fared the night after they faced the Warriors. So that was, those teams went 1-4 in those five games and included some of the more surprising outcomes that have happened in the season so far. So Toronto lost that weird game to the Phoenix Suns, Utah lost to the Kings, and then Cleveland basically sat all their best guys and lost to the Pistons. So those were three of the five. And the one win was actually the Rockets, and that really, it was a really impressive game where they flew to Denver after that double overtime game and beat the crap out of the Nuggets. So that was interesting in its own way. And overall this year, opponents are, or the other teams are 2-8 in the 10 games that have been played the day after playing the Warriors. And again, in the earlier part, in the previous five games, there were some surprising ones. I know there was at least one other loss at Phoenix, I believe that was Portland, and then another loss in Sacramento. I can't remember who the other one was. But that is something worth watching. And while I said that the Warriors don't play anybody on the second end of a back-to-back, they actually play four teams on the front end. So we will see if those kind of show, confirm this little pattern. And obviously, it's only 10 games. You can't read a whole lot into it, especially with variables like opponent strength and fatigue and travel and so many other things. But if it persists, if it continues, it's just something that's vaguely interesting. I guess we can call it that. And then the last part of the schedule thing, which is something that I personally find really interesting, is the rest advantage. So rest advantage is, I do it very rigidly. It's just if you have been off more days before that game than the other team, you have rest advantage. If it's the same, it's neutral. And if one team has, you know, has played less, if they play, let's say, so if it's a Thursday game, one team played Wednesday, one team played Tuesday, then the team that played on Tuesday has a rest advantage. In the beginning of the year, the Warriors were 8-0 in games where they had that rest advantage, where they did that. And that streak actually snapped on the first day of December because that was the Rockets game. The Warriors had a one-day rest advantage in that game, and they ended up winning the next four. So it wasn't anything really, really big in that. But they were 4-2 in games that were neutral, so where the teams had the same amount of rest before, and 5-0 in the games where they had a rest disadvantage. And that was the group that was actually the most impressive to me because the Warriors had some really tough games in that stretch. The Clippers game was a rest disadvantage, even though, you know, that wasn't a back-to-back for the Warriors. The next night in Utah was one, Detroit was one, and so those games were tough. I actually, in the piece that I did for this and for The Athletic, I circled that as being a big test area for this team, and they absolutely got through that with flying colors. So I'm legitimately really impressed that they did that. Some of those games did get a little bit easier by context, by injuries and all that, the Utah game most notably, but you still have to win them. And those are a lot of trap games like the Minnesota one and so many others. So impressive all the same. And in January, the Warriors only have one game with a rest advantage, but of all things, it's against the Cavs in the Martin Luther King Day rematch. The Warriors will have had more rest than the Cavs. They have four games with a rest disadvantage, which I think ties in with them having so many more back-to-backs than their opponents, and nine with equal rest. And a big part of the reason why that happens is because in January, you get into a little bit of an equilibrium in terms of when the kind of the on-again, off-again type thing. And my theory is that since the Warriors play more national TV games than most, play more Thursday games than most teams, that that leads to a little bit of this just because they want to get the schedule back in line. So they play, sometimes they play Thursday, Fridays and things like that. And that leads to the rest disadvantage. We'll see if it matters. I mean, they were 5-0 in those games this month, but we will see in January if that continues. So all of those are things to watch moving forward. I personally find it very interesting, and I like doing it in a way that doesn't account for opponent strength and weakness, because then you get into a whole bunch of other messiness. And so if you just say straight up advantage, disadvantage, and everything else like that, and then you can provide context when that context is important. But that's enough on the schedule analysis, and still plenty to talk about though with the four factors. Briefly, for those who are unfamiliar, the four factors are coined by Dean Oliver in Basketball on Paper, his great book. And the four factors are shooting, turnovers, rebounding, and free throws. And so basically they each have different values, and he picked a statistic to measure each one of them. The information, if you wanted to get it, is actually on NBA.com stats page. One of the drag down menus, their site's going through a changeover right now, but it's actually, there's a lot of stuff there. You just have to figure out how to use it. It's all there. It's also on the media site, which is generally what I use, but it's on the public site now in a pretty usable way when you figure out how the heck to get there. But we'll start with shooting. It's the most important. Oliver gives it 40% of the whole thing, so that's a much larger piece of the pie than any other ones. And the stat there is effective field goal percentage. Basically, that is field goal percentage, or just how many shots you make and miss, but it counts the fact that three-pointers are worth more than twos. And the Warriors are, unsurprisingly, first in the NBA in this as an offensive metric, because they have a really efficient offense, and because their flaws on that end are not related to how well they are, how good they are at putting the ball in the basket. It's related to other stuff that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. So they were first in this last year, they're first in it this year, they were first in it at this point last season as well. So a traditional strength for them, but the rate they're at now is better than they were last year. So they're 56.5%, they were at 55.7%, so about 1% better than they were last year. And the last time I did this, the Warriors were third in opponent effective field goal percentage, so defensive, basically. And they've moved up to second with 48%. So you can think about that massive difference. So their effective field goal percentage is 56.5%, and their opponent is 48%. So that gives a big margin. It's part of the reason the Warriors have the best record in the league. It's actually a significant part of it. But what one of the things that I found fascinating, and it gets into the idea of kind of how you transfer year by year, and part of the reason why I use ranking as opposed to the specific number, is that the Warriors are second with 48% effective opponent field goal percentage. That would have been 10th last season at this same point, and the Warriors themselves last year were third, holding opponents to 46.8% effective field goal percentage. So that just means that offenses have been more efficient at the start of this year, and we'll actually see that in a couple of different categories. But I look at the relative terms more. The only team they're behind, I believe, is the Utah Jazz. I'm not completely sure of that offhand, but they are only behind one team. And one of the big elements of the Warriors' success back in 2014-15, when they won the title, is that they actually pulled off the double of being best in the league in both of these. They were not last year. I believe the Spurs were first and they were second. So they're echoing that now, and considering the Warriors won 73 games last year, not a big deal that they're in second, not first, but it would be a nice little feather in their cap. The second most important of the factors is turnovers. Turnovers are worth 25%. If I didn't mention, the shooting is 40%. So it's a much bigger scale. Turnovers are still a big problem for the Golden State Warriors. They are 20th in the league. They turn the ball over on 14.6% of all their possessions. It is one of the big bugaboos, if you want to call it that, of their offense. However, that 14.6% is bad. It is a lot better than the 15.7 they had at this time last year, which was put them in 25th in the league. So they've improved off of where they were, but last season they got better from those dregs. They were in 25th at that point, end of the year 19th. They turned the ball over a lot less the rest of the year and brought their percentage all the way up to 14.9, which is about where it is right now. So if the Warriors can improve, that's a good thing. If they stay about the same, it's not catastrophic, but certainly not good. And the other side of the coin is more positive. And so the Warriors are forcing more turnovers now than they were before. They were 12th at the end of November. They are still 12th, but that is a step up from 19th, which is where they were at this point last year. And this is another thing where that offensive execution part that I talked about in shooting carries over also, because the Warriors' 14.4% forced turnover rate, so very close to their own turnover rate, would have been 22nd last season, but it's 12th. So that means teams are turning the ball over a lot less at the early part of the year. I do not know exactly what that relates to. It could be continuity, could be a lot of other different things. And again, that's why I compare teams relative to other teams more than the numbers themselves, because it seems like there are larger factors in play. And while it would be great for the team, for their fans, for the coaching staff, if they could reduce this turnover rate, at least they're forcing more than before, so it makes the overall equation a little bit more favorable. But still, arguably the biggest, or most likely the second biggest, potential problem with this team. The third factor is rebounding, And I love rebounding for this because the way that it works is it calculates it in terms of offensive rebound rate, because your offensive rebound rate is that, and your opponent offensive rebound rate is your defensive rebound rate. So you get the whole thing kind of put together. And if you look at it at a very kind of basic level, the Warriors, you look at it and you go, oh, it's about the same as last year. They're 19th in the league in offensive rebounding. They were 19th at the end of last season. So you go, oh, okay, you know, about where they were, even though the front court rotation has changed so substantially, not only with the centers changing, but also Durant and Harrison Barnes. However, it's important to get a little bit of context here, because at this point last season, the Warriors were 6th in offensive rebounding, and the biggest difference is Festus Ezeli. So Ezeli was pretty healthy through the first couple months of the season last year. He'd missed a few games. His first real extended absence was, yeah, I think he missed about 5 games at the end of December and the beginning of January. But then he missed a lot more games. That really started kicking in late January. And then they fell off from 6th to the 19th, where they ended up, which is where they are right now. So that means they were a lot worse than that and just kind of made their way back into the pack. So we'll see what happens this year. The Warriors could change over their personnel depending on how they want to handle JaVale McGee, who's a good offensive rebounder, if they want to give a few more minutes to Kevon Looney, who is also a good offensive rebounder. So we'll have to kind of see. But 19th in terms of offensive rebounding is fine when you consider that they are an incredibly efficient offense anyway. It's not essential. And one of the things that kind of came into play with this, and I'll actually get into this more in the defensive rebounding, is how it works with the death lineup, because the death lineup, broadly speaking, is not the greatest as a rebounding unit, not surprisingly, considering they're small. And that doesn't really matter. It's a good it's a good illustration of the point, because they're so good at the other things that the fact that they don't get as many of their few misses is not the biggest deal in the world. It'd be great if they did, you know, more offensive rebounds, all other things equal, is better than fewer, but it really does depend. The big potential problem here is on the defensive glass. The Warriors ended the season last year in 16th in the league, and they were 19th at this point, but they're 24th right now in the league in defensive rebounding. And this gets into the idea that I'm really interested in terms of where this season goes, because the death lineup, Draymond at center, Durant, all those guys, they're only getting 71.2% of opponent misses. That 71.2 is really bad. And so you're going to sit there going, oh my God, the sky is falling. You know, what's going on with that? Last year, that group with Harrison Barnes instead of Kevin Durant got 71.6. So basically the same rebound rate. And of course, that was a much larger sample size. The lineup has only played 143 minutes so far this year. But it's worth remembering that they can still do it. But that is part of the reason why some people freak out about how the Warriors are doing the playoffs. Because if bigs can stay on the floor, and that was the big difference between 2016 finals and 2015 finals, if bigs can stay on the floor against the Warriors offense, then they can attack the offensive glass against the Warriors as well. So Tristan Thompson was the archetype of this last year. He was awesome at moments on the offensive glass, and the Warriors couldn't play him off because Curry wasn't as great on switches, and it's a big part of why that matters. So we'll see how it goes moving forward, but it's something worth watching. And then the final category at just 15% is free throws. Free throws are measured in free throw attempt rate, which connects free throw, how often you shoot free throws, to your field goal. So it pace adjusts, it adjusts on all that sort of stuff. And the conventional wisdom, justifiably so, was that adding Kevin Durant was going to make the Warriors much more dangerous, much more aggressive at getting to the line, because Durant is much better at getting to the line than anybody really the Warriors had last year, if we exclude the Hakka guys. And that logic holds. I'm not saying it didn't, but it hasn't manifested itself right now. They finished the season last year at 25th, but they were 13th at this point. I think that also ties in with Azili's minutes, but they're currently in 19th, so they're kind of splitting that, but not improving in the way that they were. And I think they were above league average when I did this at the beginning of December, so they've fallen off a little bit. We'll see how that affects it. But the Warriors are doing a nice job comparatively on the defensive end here, because the Warriors, so they were in the early days of the Kerr era, and then Mark Jackson, they were fouling a lot more. They were in kind of bottom half of the league for sure, but often around 19 to 25, so somewhere in that area. They're 14th right now, which is almost exactly the same as where they were at this time last year, both in terms of the rate and in terms of their position relative to the league, and they finished 15th, so basically league average. that's good enough. It would be awesome if they could be a little bit better, especially because the Warriors don't get a lot of the benefit, you could call it, out of fouling. A lot of them are those silly fouls. I talked about this a little bit in my piece for The Athletic about that Mavericks game, is that they have a nasty penchant for fouling jump shooters. And if they could clean that up even a little bit, it would really help. But outside of that, it's not catastrophic. It's not what's hurting their defense too much other than on the margins, but it is worth watching moving forward. So those are the two big things for today. This is going to be a jam-packed week of Locked On Warriors and just Warriors content because they play so many games. They play Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at home. We'll definitely do the Monday and Wednesday games, and considering Friday's against the Grizzlies should be a big game, I'm assuming I will do that as well. And then probably going to do something on the intervening day, just depending on field, depending on timing, and might, I don't jinx anything, have something really cool on one of those midday games. It's in the works right now, it's just not finalized, and for those of you who listen to my other podcast, you know that I do not reveal a guest or a topic until it's locked in and basically already recorded. So that is something that I'm looking forward to, and if it happens, you should definitely look forward to as well. You can also check out the Locked On podcasts about the Niners and Raiders. Both had very interesting weekends. The Niners firing their coach and GM. The Raiders still making the playoffs, but having the quarterback drama with McGloin and everything else. You can listen to those or any other NFL podcast. You can also check out any other Locked On basketball podcast, NBA or fantasy basketball as well. Josh Lloyd and Dave Locke do great work on those, and any of the other team ones if you like. So that's enough for now. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, you can reach out to me, DanielLarueNBA@gmail.com. Have some good suggestions for different topics. I'll try to hit those at various moments. Still working on exactly how I want to integrate that kind of stuff. And then also you could reach out at DanielLarue on Twitter. The harder thing there is that I try to see everything, but I don't. That's just the way it works. You have a lot of people who send you stuff. Sometimes you miss it, but with the email, it's always there. It just sits there in my email box and taunts me. So you have all that there. If you want to support the show, you can leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe to every episode, or subscribe, download every episode. All those things really do help. And you can check out sponsors when I talk about them on the air or when I talk about them online or whatever you really want to do. And I really do appreciate that. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.